Hello, I'm Philip Sharman, and this is episode 11 of the Goodnight Sweetcast. I'm joined, as always, by Christopher Wallace.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about episode 5...
Series 2.
...of Goodnight Sweethearts, entitled Wish Me Luck. Although I do question why anybody would wish Gary luck on this particular escapade that he's up to this week. Playing us in, and this should put play to anybody who thinks that we just throw this podcast together without thought or planning, a version of Goodnight Sweetheart from 1958 by Reg Owen and his orchestra.
Oh.
So chosen because we're going to be concentrating quite a lot on Reg this week.
It's a Reg episode. Regisode.
Very much a Regisode, a very Reg-centric episode. We've not seen much out of him for the last few weeks.
No.
So to really give Christopher Etheridge as Reg a chance to shine.
It's a good surname, isn't it? Etheridge. Christopher Etheridge. Christopher Etheridge. Christopher Etheridge. Say it.
Christopher Etheridge.
Christopher Etheridge.
Christopher Etheridge.
It's good. Said it like well that. Done, his mum and dad.
Well done, Mr. and Mrs. Etheridge. So not only have we chosen a version of Goodnight Sweetheart that's by someone called Reg, but it's also taken from the album called Holiday in London that was released in 1958. And that's very much what Gary's trying to do this week, is take himself on holiday, albeit a permanent one, to war-torn East End London. It's not an ideal holiday destination, is it?
Well, no, you would think not.
Before we start with that, though, we've got some business to attend to after...
Business.
We've got some business to attend to after last time's podcast. Some housekeeping, if you will. It's some serious business. We need to take care of this. Chris, you've taken a bit of stick.
Why?
You've been getting some heat. People are questioning your cereal consuming credentials is what's happening. And this is important stuff. I mean, some people might be thinking, what's this got to do with Goodnight Sweetheart? Well, not much, but bear with us. Last time on the podcast, you stated how much you enjoy eating Kellogg's Variety Pack cereal treats.
That's true.
And how you like sometimes to have the ricicles and then other times to not have the ricicles so that you can give yourself a little treat. Now, more than one person has pointed out to us, and the evidence seems to be pretty damning, that there are no ricicles in a Kellogg's variety pack.
Anymore.
Haven't been for a long time. Can you explain yourself?
No, I cannot. All I can say is, in the mornings, it's a giddy haze. So I don't know what I'm consuming.
Clearly not. I've been and looked at some variety packs, so I now know what's in there. Would you like to redress your version of what is actually in a variety pack?
Cornflakes.
Cornflakes, yes.
Cocoa Pops.
Cocoa Pops, yes.
Rice Krispies.
Yes.
This is where it gets tricky. Grahams.
Grahams?
No, not Grahams.
They're not even made by Kellogg's. Beginning to think you've never even seen a variety pack and that for some strange reason you're just pretending. You've missed out Frosties. Reportedly,
oh, of course,
your
the staple.
And at the moment, at least, there are Rice Krispies Moons and Stars?
No. Moons and Stars?
Mm.
I've heard of them before, but no, I don't mess with them.
Oh, I feel like you don't know as much about cereal.
I don't. I just grab them. I just grab the cereal. Just whatever's on offer, I'll just take it. Just take the cereal. Don't even think twice about it.
But it has to be in a tiny box.
If it's in a tiny box, yeah. If it's in a big box, sometimes I just buy 6 big boxes of cereal. Are you happy? Breakfast, dinner, lunch, it doesn't matter. It's just cereal.
There are lots of people out there that share your opinion that eating the variety box is the way to go. So you're not completely on your own. Has been pointed out that there is a Nestlé version of the variety
with
pack.
With the Nesquik in.
Has got the Nesquik in, yes. So you know, maybe you could diversify in that way and then not know what's in that pack as well.
Yeah, maybe.
But we were correct in naming the ricicles mascot.
Yeah, it's, you know, it rolls off the tongue.
Well, we went for Richard thinking it was so preposterous it couldn't possibly be true.
Mm.
We were just being silly. But so were the makers of Ricicle when they came up with the motif of who they were going to use for advertising their delicious sugary Rice Krispies. And his name is actually Captain Rick.
Hmm.
Lots of people have pointed that out to us.
Yeah, it's on his hat. Probably too long to fit Richard on, so it's just shortened.
What I do have to admit is that following all of our cereal chat last time, I've been eating a lot of cereal.
Yeah, well.
I've been eating a lot of cereal. It's just been on my mind. I went out, I got some Frosted Shreddies and a lot of Weetabix.
What do you put on your Weetabix? You can't just have boring milk.
They would like you to think that you're, you know, spooning out a passion fruit or chopping up a banana.
Oh, no, I do that.
You do
the banana. Yeah, special days.
Oh, who's got
That's
time?
Great.
Just sprinkle some sugar on. Done.
No, I do chop up a banana when I'm feeling fancy. Let's go back to the scenario. the lady has come in. She's seen the bills on the floor. She thinks he's dangerous. She goes upstairs. She sees the tiny little boxes of cereal. Maverick. The morning comes. Breakfast? Well, what nonsense is he going to bring out? Probably like a can of Iron Brew and like a handful of like stale Nesquik. No. Weetabix and bananas.
I feel like if anyone is qualified to speak about Weetabix, it's the people of Kettering, because we are broadcasting from the home of Weetabix. Mm. And to have not mentioned them in last week's podcast was probably negligent on our part.
Mm, shameful.
10 minutes in, not talked about anything other than cereal. When we weren't talking about cereal on last week's show, and there was a good 5, maybe 6 minutes of chat about stuff other than cereal, we were talking, because we're not afraid to really push those big issues, we were talking about old people food.
Oh, is this just the one where you pick up on all the things I said that have got me in trouble?
I think the point in general stands, but there may be exceptions.
There might be exceptions to the rule.
Chloe has got in touch on Twitter, and she's tweeted a picture of the roast dinner that her grandma made for her. I tell you what, it looks handsome.
It does. It does. I'm like, some, all right, fair enough. Some exceptions to the rule. I will say, though, on that plate, there was a pattern.
Yeah, but that didn't detract from the...
No, it didn't. The dinner looked fantastic.
It was definitely a patterned...
But that's plate. Just my personal preference, as that's not an old people thing. Weatherspoons, they've been dabbling in patterns.
No more plain plates.
I'm probably behind the times. Maybe they've come back. If Spoon says it's okay, Spoon says it's okay.
It's a strange rule to live your life by.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things that go on a Weatherspoons that objectionally are not okay. And that you should not emulate in your day-to-day life.
No.
Just bear that in mind. Wish me luck.
Wish me luck.
Series 2, episode 5. So we're in full swing. This is the second episode to be written by Gary Lawson and John Phelps, the same people that wrote last week's episode. As with last week, it's a pretty high concept offering. This isn't business as usual, which can be said about a lot of Good Night, Sweetheart, and that's where it sets itself apart from a lot of sitcoms. It's not about starting off with the same routine, ending the end of the episode exactly where you began, which was always the way that sitcoms were designed
Last week was very much that. Last week was a very much standard, this is a sitcom episode.
The crux of the matter, and obviously, being as how we've got a whole hour to fill, we'll be going into this in more detail, but at its core, what's happening is Gary's finally got around to making a decision.
He's always going to have to make this decision. Couldn't carry on this charade forever.
It's the decision that Chris made within about 5 seconds.
I just had to look upon her.
Of seeing Dervla Kerwin's face.
Yeah.
Took Gary a good while longer because of reasons of drama, but he's there and he has decided that he needs to be with Phoebe and he needs to leave Yvonne.
That's the major difference between me and Gary. I would have followed my heart straight away, without a doubt.
And your method of following your heart, I imagine you'd have done exactly the same as he does and just decide to fake your own suicide.
Exactly.
Seems like the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
Seems like there's no possible negative consequences there at all.
I'd have fun with it.
You'd have fun with it.
I would leave something where I would get a Wikipedia article, a mystery, and then a BuzzFeed quiz about what happened to Chris Wallace. Maybe a film. So I'd leave all clues, involve some sort of ghosts, conspiracies.
Get some real mileage out of it.
Yeah, so I'll live on as a legacy and a film. But all the while, I'll just be back in time, because then when you go back forward as an old man and you see all your little breadcrumbs left behind and there's all these documentaries where talking heads are saying, but no one really knows what happened to Chris.
Ah.
Just one day, they found like his shoes.
So the clues and the mystery that you'd leave, would they reveal towards the truth?
No. There would be a complete red herring. I would lead someone something to do with, I don't know, Slovakia. And have like people going around looking for Slovakia because he had some connection there. But I didn't, and that would be fun for me.
Like a preposterous Lord Lucan scenario.
Yes, exactly.
You see yourself as Lord Lucan.
Yeah, go for it. Just go wild.
You've got to kill a nanny in the process for that. Might be a bit of a stretch.
Just the more conspiracies I can meld together all into this one thing, so then at some point people will think that there is some grand scheme involving me, when really I just went to be with Dervla Kerwin.
I mean, there is an argument that says that is a grand scheme in and of itself, because you have gone back in time in order to achieve it, but well, you want to send them off down a different route.
I'm like, you know, in Batman the Riddler, I'm like the opposite of the Riddler. I don't leave him clues that Batman can find, so like to find him, I would do the exact opposite of that. I'd send Batman on a wild goose chase and then do all the crimes like he should have done. Give him all these notes, you just leave him somewhere else.
But we're not there yet anyway. that's where we're going, but it's not where we're starting off. Where we start off is in Cricklewood. Yvonne has got the champagne out.
Pops it in his face.
A health and safety nightmare. Yeah. You've got to be careful. Those corks can damage. And if you're opening a bottle of champagne, then put a tea towel over the top just to collect. I mean, I know it's not as dramatic. And yeah, if you're on the podium having just won a Formula One race, it's probably not the best way to do it. But in an enclosed area with loved ones nearby,
This is a TV thing. They always do this in TV. But in reality, on New Year's Eve, it's always someone tries to do it and they get all nervous and then someone takes it from them. And then that person says, shield your eyes. And all the children run out. That's what tends to happen when champagne is unleashed.
And it being champagne, the general desire is for not half the bottle to end up on the floor. No such worries, certainly, in the Sparrow household. Quite happy to just lose half a bottle of champagne all over the floor. Wasteful. And we've established that Gary's got quite the drink problem as it is. He doesn't want to see any booze
going
to waste.
He's lost his license. That's an indication that he's got a problem.
We don't know the reason for the champagne. Gary's first assumption... you're pregnant.
I would assume that.
Yvonne reacts very badly to this, that he's being a pig and that's the worst thing he could say in the world. They have been actively trying to have a baby. What isn't clear is if that's what Gary thinks, whether or not he was happy with that. Does he want a baby?
Well, that reaction that Nicholas Lentest gave to that wasn't negative or positive.
No, it was supportive. It's a shock. And given this is Gary that we're talking about here, if he does anything that isn't dickish, then take that down as a win.
What would have been wrong is if, considering that he spent so much time in the 40s, he used the bombs going off, he thought that when the champagne pot, he just like punched her. That would be a negative reaction.
That would have been a negative reaction.
He didn't do that. Didn't go, oh, Hitler. Didn't do any of that. So it all was good. He did the best.
He didn't shout Hitler in Yvonne's face, and that's the best we can hope for.
Yeah.
But she's not pregnant. She has, however, been offered a new job as an assistant personnel manager.
Ooh, high flyer.
We already know that the company that she works for is Rumbelows. How big is the personnel structure at Rumbelows is the question that I
have. It's
got to
be pretty big because half of the drivers are drunks.
There's a lot of paperwork involved with that kind of thing, so fair enough. She's already working in personnel. We know that about her. But not as high up as an assistant personnel manager. So she's some sort of personnel lackey at the moment, which is never how she's presented herself. You'd always assumed that she got some sort of managerial role.
What gave you that impression?
Her attitude.
Her attitude? She gave off a managerial...
Her clothing, her air.
It's very interesting that you would put those two together.
In the past, she certainly seemed to have lots of information about what was going on, as if she was privy to lots of stuff.
Yeah, so she was... you know, intelligent as all managers have to be, not like a standard, bog-standard office worker, office cleric. You put the personnel, the management in the highest, obviously, by her demeanour and the way she dresses, as opposed to the scum that works beneath her. Is that what you're saying?
I feel like my words might be being twisted to suggest some kind of classism on my part.
Mm. Yes.
But it can't be classist because she's northern and I'm bestowing these things upon her.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I'll let you do these things.
I'm pretty certain I dug myself out of that hole. Gary makes out that it's okay that she's not having a baby because having a baby's dead easy. Anyone could do that. Mm. Not a great choice of words, but your heart's in the right place, Gary. They also have a dig at the Tories, which is something that happens frequently on Goodnight, Sweetheart. But... this was playing to a stereotype that I'm not really familiar with. The suggestion is that any idiot can make a baby. Look at all the Tory ministers pumping them out. I mean, yeah, Tory ministers have probably got kids. Mm. I don't think of them as being particularly prodigious. No. Is that the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Prodigious.
You're asking the wrong man. What was it he said about frogs born as well? Is that a reptile thing? Is he insinuating that the Tories are reptiles?
I don't remember the Frogspawn.
Did I make that up too?
It's not in my notes, I'll tell you that much.
Well, maybe it's not true. Do you know what I've realised doing this? I should probably take notes.
If you're interested in the process that we go through to make this podcast, we watch the episode before we record. We watch it together.
Yep.
I have previously watched the entire series just before we started, so that I've got an overview of all of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, you've watched all of the first two series...
yep.
Then we watch an episode individually. I make lots of notes. Mm. Chris makes no notes.
No notes. I don't do that in general. I don't like notes. How can you pay attention to what you're doing if you're taking notes about what you're doing? Because you're supposed to be paying attention to the thing. How can you pay attention to the thing when you're writing down what the thing is? Because then they've moved on to the next thing, but you're still writing down things. And then sometimes you might have done a doodle.
There is the danger of doodling, yeah. The doodle danger.
But yeah, notes, I just can't take them. But what seems to be happening, as we're learning through doing this, if I don't remember, I fill in gaps. And I'm filling in gaps with things that I've created of my own mind.
Which in this case is some reference to Frogspawn.
Some reference to Frogspawn, and I've treated it as fact.
How much of the rest of your life has never really happened?
I don't know.
It's a danger, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't want you to think that I meticulously take notes of every aspect of my life. I very much don't.
But you don't tend to fill in gaps?
No, I just forget stuff.
I never forget stuff, but that might mean that a lot of the stuff that I am remembering is fabricated.
What we need is some kind of Black Mirror-style implant to record everything that happens for us.
I could do with that.
Or if a significant proportion of everything you ever say or do is recorded and released in the form of a podcast, that might do it too.
That does help. Yeah, that does help. It's fine. Don't say I therefore don't need to take notes. I just talk to these people, but and then they can tell me.
Kind of rely on my notes
and your
what
notes.
Happens,
that also
it?
Happens at the meeting as well. There's other people's notes.
Yeah,
that also happened in school as well. There was other people's work.
Gary wants to make amends.
He does
for saying that she was pregnant and to congratulate her for a new job offer.
Yeah.
So let's.
He does well here, actually. This is a, you know, a nice gesture.
Malaysian food
sounds good.
So it does, doesn't it? I quite fancy some Malaysian.
He even says to her, "We'll go right now. If we go now, we'll get there for 8:30. I'll change into my other coat." That's all he needs
no,
to do.
None of that happened.
That definitely happened.
Show me the notes. I can't see.
I don't
know.
There was no notes, but he definitely, because I remember thinking that he's got more than one coat, and he did because he wore another coat in a later scene, and I thought that man's got more than one coat. Good. It's the only thing he has got. That's interesting considering he wears a lot of the same clothes. That's not notes. That's just memories.
Well done. The phone rings. Yvonne says, "Don't get that. It'll just be Stella." Rude. We've established that in previous episodes. They cannot be polite on the phone. Don't get that. It'll only be Stella. She's only going to want to talk to me.
Ask me about my interview and job prospects.
Oh, say nice things and want to chat. Oh, what could be worse? Stella. So we let the answer phone kick in. Very humdrum answer phone message that they'd got, did you think? It was very much just, "This is Gary and Yvonne, leave a message after the tone." Now, if you'd have asked me, in that household, whose voice would appear on the answer phone?
Yvonne's.
You'd think Yvonne, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You'd have thought she'd want to take control.
She's the voice of the house.
The answer phone kicks in, and we get to hear Stella's voice.
For the first time, is this?
We've heard it kind of shouting through the phone at Ron. I wonder if they used the same person. I wonder if they had a designated Stella, even though she wasn't cast yet. Stella lets the cat out of the bag that the new job, Macclesfield. We were talking about comedy place names last week, and Macclesfield ticks all the boxes.
Yeah. Got that nice little sounding double letter.
Big enough that people have heard of it, not so big that it feels too familiar. Mm-hmm. Got a hard comedy K in the middle of it. Little bit obscure, little bit silly. Macclesfield, ideal. We learn something about the history of Gary Sparrow.
Yes, we do. And can I remember it?
Without looking at my notes, can you remember it?
His mum and dad are from Lincoln.
His mum and dad are from Lincoln.
Yes, brain, well done.
Which presumably means that he is from Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily work that way because mums and dads can move.
Sometimes.
And obviously, immediately, Gary doesn't want to go to Macclesfield. Why would he?
No reason.
Macclesfield, I'd imagine. Never been to Macclesfield. It might be lovely. Have you been to Macclesfield?
Nah, it's probably the same as Kettering. There's nothing there. A couple of Subways and a B&M. That's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, they should rename Macclesfield that.
Yeah, they should.
In the way that villages used to be named, so if they had like a river with a bow in it next to it, that would be named after that little geographic feature. They should do that again.
That's much better. That's all middling sort of towns have that. Yeah. Two Subways and a B&M.
Two Starbucks and a Pret.
Yeah, it's a bit higher though. Ooh,
that would be a bit classier. That's home county.
Yeah, more so.
you could tell the difference that way, yeah. Yeah, Gary's desperate to come up with some reasons why he can't move to Macclesfield and take that job. None of them are very good because, obviously, the only reason that he's really got is because of his bit on the side. Yvonne suggests that he doesn't have any sort of career to do with it and going to Macclesfield.
She is right, I think.
She's more right than she knows.
Yeah. This situation isn't what I would choose because I've obviously chosen Phoebe. But if I was going to stay with Yvonne, I would think, well, actually, the temptation isn't there. So I'll just go to Macclesfield, maybe start a new life because I've got no career here. There's literally nothing here for me except Ron. Oh, but I will miss Ron, but he'll get over it. Then soon the internet will come along.
It's around the corner. Yeah, they're already starting to use, I imagine. So what, we're 1995? Yeah, we're getting the first glimmerings of people saying the words information superhighway.
Exactly.
That's how it started. That's how the internet started. Somebody came up with that phrase. They used that exhaustively for about 2 years.
Information superhighway. Uh-huh. That's how you communicated with others. It yeah. sounds cool.
Well, then it got surpassed by the notion of surfing, which sounded even cooler.
It does. Surfing the intergalactic superhighway.
The intergalactic superhighway. Don't make out that you're that young that you don't remember this happening.
No, I do remember that happening.
Oh, suddenly everything was about the information superhighway.
And the World Wide Web.
Gary doesn't hang about in turning this predicament into his worst plan ever.
Very quickly, he comes to this conclusion.
He's already made up his mind when we meet him again at the printers having a chat with Ron. He describes himself as a weak-kneed eunuch in so much that it's so inaccurate. He has decided to portray himself once again as this massive victim in a conspiracy designed to chop off his testicles in a way that just isn't reality.
No.
That's not what's happened. What's happened is your wife, the woman that you took some vows to love for the rest of your life, who you profess to still loving, has been offered an improvement in her career, and it makes her happy, and she would like to do that and discuss that with you.
Yep. And all she asks in return is that you take your unemployed ass with her.
She
really?
Hasn't even said that. I mean, there's a reason why she's not mentioned the fact it's in Macclesfield yet. It's because she's not been to Macclesfield.
No,
she doesn't know for definite. She wants to celebrate the fact that she feels wanted and valued by the people offering her the job. That's the celebratory thing, not necessarily the moving or the job. And
no,
she's
not
certainly,
at all. No.
She certainly has not done anything to approach your testicles, Gary.
Nope.
They are intact. They are where you left them.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably just behind your penis.
Yep.
That's probably where you left them. I don't know. I haven't been keeping tabs.
That is where they tend to live.
He admits that he should be behind Yvonne. He should be helping her out. They should be a team. He knows that that's what's expected of him. He understands the rules. He's not an idiot, but he doesn't want to do any of it. Because
no.
already he's gone there. He has concocted this plan that he's going to fake his own suicide.
Yep. It's a big jump. Well, it's a big jump in more than one way.
It's a big jump. It's really dark.
Mm. It's a dark subject, but it's not dealt with as dark. No one's...
No. Part of me thinks it's too dark and it's a funny decision, and if you're going to make these kind of references, it's a little irresponsible to not delve in deeper. But at the same time, it's quite a skill to have managed to keep it light and bright and not deal with the real-life consequences of what that would mean to Gary and the people around him, that he could so flippantly decide that the people in my life who love me and who care about me, I care so little and I value the amount they care for me so little that I could just pretend to take my own life and have them think that about me.
It's a bit of a golden opportunity for him, really. She's going away and he's decided he would rather be with Phoebe. He should think this gives him the opportunity to still be a coward, but he can leave Yvonne. If his worst comes to worst, he can just deliver a letter and say, look, I'm leaving you, I'm not happy, don't contact me, bye. And then he'll just go. And nobody would really be, they think, oh, you're a twat. But they wouldn't think anything else of it, rather than I'm going to jump off a bridge. Goodbye forever, here are my clothes. Deal with it. That's much worse. He could have just said, I'm gone. I don't like where things are going. I hope you enjoy Macclesfield. This is a good opportunity for us to go our separate ways and start new lives. I am going to Dundee. I don't know. But you live in Macclesfield. And then you never has to deal with it again. She won't think that he's jumped off a bridge. She will think he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And then everyone's happy. No, not the horrible, horrible realities of bridge suicide.
Not least, it would make his decision reversible and it wouldn't have that finality. I mean, you can see why he might want that, but it's such a terrible thing to do, especially since we have for the first time established that he's got parents as well. There's a wider family to consider here. To say nothing of the fact that once again he has completely disregarded Ron and the consequences for him.
Mm.
He has to know the truth. If he was going to do this, what the hell are you telling Ron for?
Mm.
That's not fair.
No, because
he's
Ron
got
is
to
left.
Deal with that. He's left with all of the aftermath. He can't join in because he knows the truth. It is a repulsive thing to do.
Mm.
It is, if you stop and think about it on any level at all, it is the worst possible thing that you can do.
And not necessary.
And yeah,
completely not necessary.
Completely, yeah. There's no need to do it. There are other ways out. But the show doesn't give you enough time to. It treats it with such brevity and such lightness that you deliberately don't stop and think about what's happening. In much the same way as you don't stop and think about the affair as an affair as much as you should when you overanalyze every episode to the depth that we tend to do.
Who would do that?
Who has enough time in their lives to do that kind of thing? Of course, there is a precedence. When we put this out on the social media saying we're recording this episode, the first thing that was referenced, and of course this is where people's minds go when they think about faking suicide and they think about sitcoms, is people think straight about Reggie Perrin. The Fall and Rise of Reggie Perrin was a BBC sitcom from the late 70s starring Leonard Rossiter as a down-at-heel businessman going through something of a midlife crisis. It was very surreal in places. It was very dark in places. He was playing a very broken man in a caricatured world, really, in terms of the people that he worked for and the company that he worked for and his family life and everything else. It ultimately culminated, I think, but series one culminated in him faking his own death and going and restarting his life. Okay. Or it might have been in the middle of the series, but that was the whole premise, and that's what the whole story was built about. And it was a real big deal. It was so pivotal to everything that happened that it wasn't treated remotely flippantly at all. So although it's got very clear nods to that being what happened, it's not the same at all. It's very different. I'd really love to, if you know more about Reggie Perrin than I do, and I really, because I do remember it being quite great, and it's certainly beloved by a lot of people. If you've got any thoughts and feelings about how Reggie Perrin handled the suicide motif compared to how it's dealt with in Goodnight Sweetheart, I'd be very interested to hear your thoughts. As opposed to last week, where we learnt that Ron loves a scheme, even Ron knows straight away this is a terrible idea. He wants to stop Gary from doing this, and so would any right-thinking person.
And he does say he needs his help, but it appears he doesn't. I can't see what help Ron...
I think he needs some fivers. Ron tries to physically stop him. This is harsh from Ron. This is Ron who has played along with everything so far. Mm-hmm. Kind of unquestioning, to the point of hero worship. Now, seeing that this is a step too far, is saying, no, I'm going to get in your way. Gary's response to dealing with this... Well, first of all, we get the childishness, well, I'll just stay here then. And then he throws Ron under the bus.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Are you going to stand there and stop me leaving this room?
For as long as it takes.
You going to answer that?
No.
Could be a big order. Hello? Stella, hi. Ron? No, he's just nipped down to the stockroom with that little blonde.
Hello, my love.
Wow. How many times has Ron lied for Gary?
Yeah.
When Ron has known full well that Gary is having an affair.
Hello,
and
blonde.
Yet, time and time and time again, this one time where Ron isn't even having an affair, and Gary just immediately throws him under the bus. What a terrible human being. Mm. We had another tweet from somebody during the week, from Lee Ball, saying, is it just me who doesn't see Gary Sparrow as quite the dick that GNS cast do? And I can understand, because I can understand why people like Gary Sparrow, and I can understand the favourable light that Nicholas Lyndhurst placed on the character. But to anybody who wants to defend Gary and Gary's actions, this scene more than anything else. In this scene, he is telling his best friend that he regards him so little that he's going to run away from him. He's so afraid of his own responsibilities that he's going to fake his suicide rather than deal with it. And then on top of all of that, his best friend, who has been covering for his affair for the last year, he will then tell his wife that he's having an affair when he isn't.
Hush. Does Gary not even remember the rowing boat?
Times that they've shared together.
Yeah.
The Cornettos. The slush puppies.
All of the things. All those times. Nothing to him. It's very much... I can see where Ron's coming from. And it is a little... It's the end of a relationship. Gary didn't give her monkeys.
It's bad behaviour. Mm. And as adorable as Nicholas Lyndhurst's face may be, and it is, it doesn't make up for the terrible, terrible things that he's doing. And they are concentrated in this scene into 1 3-minute segment of just awful human actions.
And to the tweeter, to Lee, I see where you're coming from, but you haven't, like, done as in-depth a character study of Gary as we have. If you had done this, then maybe you would see where we're coming from.
But before he goes, before he steps off this mortal coil, as far as anybody in 1995 is concerned, Gary's got a few loose ends to tie up. He's got that cupboard to fix.
Yep. Oh, I forgot about the cupboard. I don't know what was wrong with it. It seemed fine before. Didn't need a screwdriver.
So he's fixed the cupboard. He's prepared lunch for Yvonne. That's a nice little spread that he's put together.
What was it? Like a couple of sandwiches? There's a lemon?
It was some quartered sandwiches in a platter.
Yeah.
Maybe some, is it salmon or something? Some wedges of lemon?
Her mom was over the moon with it, though. She loved it. She loved the little platter and the fact that he fixed that thing. She loved it so much she'll be swinging off it when she gets back. Don't know what that means. She doesn't probably break it.
That's probably how it happened in the first place.
In the throes of passion, which I don't want to think about too much.
Well, when she's eating her naked muesli.
So he can't control herself.
He wants to show her how much he loves her, is the answer that he gives.
Salmon will do that.
You know another way of showing a woman how much you love her?
Don't kill yourself.
Don't kill yourself. She thinks that Gary's feeling guilty because of his response of not wanting to go to Macclesfield. Mm. She certainly doesn't think he's exhibiting some deep psychological flaws or depression that might result in him throwing himself off of London Bridge.
He just fixed the shelf.
And that's it. Goodbye. It's quite a protracted goodbye. He's obviously sad about this.
He gives her lots of bear hugs.
He's thinking, I'm never going to see you again. She's thinking, I'll see you in a couple of days' time.
Hmm. It's weird.
It's a mean thing to do. It's such a mean thing to do. He's doing bad, bad things.
Once all this has come to play and she's led to believe that he's killed himself, she'll be playing all these things through in her head. Like, oh, that's why he made that fish lunch. Why didn't he fix the shelf, though?
What does he think the next stage is going to be?
To ponder these things for the rest of her life. Horrible thing to do to someone.
Ron's playing along because he's giving Gary a lift to the bridge. Yep. I don't know London well enough to know which bridge they were on. It's clearly shot on location on an actual London bridge. I don't know which one it was. Do you know which bridge it was? Was that Greyfriars?
Who knows?
Everybody listening to this is going to know instantly and think that we're morons. You've never even been to London. But I have, but I just don't know the names of the bridges. So he's got his suitcase and he's got his clothes in a bag. Ron has another go at telling Gary to stop being a pillock. It's an understatement, to say the least. And then tells him to have a good death. That gets a big laugh. That, I don't know if it's a nervous laugh or quite what the audience is thinking, but they're playing along. They're being taught to treat this as being lighthearted and not a big deal. Gary tells Ron in the future, if always give up your seat on the tube to old men because one of them might be me.
I hate that. I hate that line. I just hate it. It's just so blech. I wouldn't give him a lift. I wouldn't turn up. Walk. Walk to the bridge. At least let me push you off the bridge.
Gary gets a little bit of comeuppance in so much that he's got no 90s money, so he can't get the tube good.
Maybe in that time he can reflect on this decision he's making.
No.
Nah.
Instead, when you actually turn up in 1941, just bitch about it. Yeah. Just complain about the fact you've had to walk. Oh, my life's so hard. I've had to walk all the way here.
And this is when we see Reg.
Reg gets loads to do this episode.
He does.
And it needs that light relief because you can't stop and think about what's happening.
No.
As much as we're criticising this whole motif to have Gary do this, if they handled it any other way, it would have been impossible because it would just be overwhelming and just quash any comedy or fun out of the programme. So they don't, and they rely heavily on Reg to be the instrument by which they do that. And that's what Reg is great for. It's clear that Lawson and Phelps have really understood the role that Reg plays and really played to his strengths in the lines that they've given him here. As soon as we get into the pub, meet Reg, he gets what has got to be this week's joke of the week.
Joke of the week.
Joke of the week.
Number 12 runs along there. Or is it the 42A? It was a time when I knew all the London bus routes off by heart. Of course, after Dunkirk, that made me a security risk. If I should be captured by a Jerry Commando snatch squad, taken back to Berlin and interrogated, they could use that information in their invasion plans.
Reg, if the Waffen-SS do turn up in Trafalgar Square, it'll be by parachute. Not on a big red London bus they caught in Lambeth.
No,
they're a devilish devious bunch, the Hun. And what with me being a bobby and all, better to be safe than sorry. So I forced myself to forget everything I knew about the transport system. I'd like to get to a position where I know nothing of any interest whatsoever.
You're close, Reg. You're very close.
It just sums up everything about Reg. Hmm. It's a bit of a sitcom trope to make one character an idiot.
Yeah.
It's easy to write, but it's very welcome in this case, and to acknowledge what it is about him, that he's deliberately making himself an idiot. Well, that's funny. He's got his tiny suitcase in tow.
It's a very small suitcase.
It's a very little suitcase. That's not got much worldly possessions in it, has it? That's not going to keep you going. Phoebe instantly assumes that he's there to say goodbye. You can understand why she might think that.
He's done it before.
He's done it many, many times before. But he's not. He's coming to move closer to her. She thinks that maybe he could take the room above the pub.
Mm.
Reg steps in and says that that wouldn't be very seemly. And he's probably right, but Gary's not appreciative of this interjection.
No. Oh, yeah, he wouldn't be. Stop cock blocking Reg.
Reg does know, round the corner on Ravenscroft Street, the house that he's moving into is owned by Reg's lady friend.
Mm.
In a first for the Goodnight Sweetcast, we're going to treat you to a second joke of the week. Second joke of the week.
Joke of the week.
I'm sure it'll all be tickety boo. The owner's a lady friend of mine.
Didn't know you had any lady friends, right?
No, now. It's strictly a professional acquaintance. She just occasionally buffs up my helmet.
That's a littler joke.
Yeah.
But it's a good one, isn't it?
It's about his penis.
So that's two jokes of the week this week. We're spoiling you. Both from Reg. He's actually quite enamoured by the landlady. We find that out later.
Mm.
And that he kind of wishes that he'd met her before, his good lady wife.
Minnie. It's nice to get a bit of backstory on Reg. Mm. All we know is he's a policeman. Which is a nice Regisode.
We see the room. Again, as we expect, it is really well decorated. There's so much going on. The set design is so rich.
It had a mangle.
Mm. All the mod cons. It's costing £7.06 a week.
What's that in real money?
I have no idea. Now what we start to see, and this is where the episode takes a shift and Gary's opinion starts to take a shift, is that we learn pretty much straight away this isn't going to be as much fun for Gary as he had hoped in his imagination.
Who would have thought moving back to a war would not be fun?
Yeah, what a surprise that the grass isn't necessarily greener in this paddock that you've envisaged for yourself.
No, because it's been bombed.
Because it's been bombed to shit. He doesn't understand the rules as well. He doesn't know how to buy bacon. Oh, and then once you've bought it, what do you do with it? Just keep it in a plate on the side, apparently. That's how to store bacon in the 1940s.
Before you put it in the mangle.
Yeah. Not what a mangle's for.
I know what a mangle's
for. Okay, good.
I was doing a joke.
Oh, you were doing a good joke.
Yes.
Just the presence of the mangle got a lot of laughs as well.
People remembering mangles.
People think mangles are inherent, but they are funny. It's a funny word.
It is.
You can't argue with. I'm enjoying saying mangle. We've said mangle a lot. Mangle, mangle, mangle.
Mangles.
Mrs. Bloss doesn't like him having women in his room.
Why?
Because of social mores. It is not acceptable to have a woman in your room when you're not married.
But I hope that this contract was drawn up and that was stipulated in it, because if my landlord said to me, this is how much you pay for the rent, you've got to do this. Oh, and also there are no women allowed. It would be very much the same as what it's like now.
Yeah, it would be of no consequence whatsoever. Yeah, it turns out that your landlord just didn't feel the need to write that into the contract. Just a waste of paper putting that bit in there. But they're out for a date.
Oh.
The worst date ever. And bear in mind that we saw two really terrible dates last week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to begin. I don't even know where to begin with how bad a date this is.
Well, they bought Reg.
That's a good place to start.
That's not...
You're going on a date. Probably don't take your friend, the idiot policeman, along with you.
That's
dating tips. Gary's already unhappy because he's not been able to buy any razor blades.
He's walking for 4 hours to buy razor blades.
He's in a bad mood. Reg hasn't bought him a cup of tea.
Ugh.
Oh, nothing worse. When you're on a date...
And that man, that old man that came, didn't bring the cup of tea.
They made an interesting decision to make Phoebe less sexy, which was to give her a cigarette.
Didn't work. I thought that was fine.
You thought, yes, that's because you love Phoebe so much.
Yeah.
But the definite decision was, we are seeing Phoebe in a more relaxed light. This
that
is how
true.
She is normally.
Yeah.
Look, she's smoking a fag and she's blowing a raspberry at Hitler. Gary's thinking, this isn't the beautiful 1940s world of wine and roses and constant nookie that I was expecting.
Reality is not always happy times, happy sexy roses times. Sometimes she's just wearing a SpongeBob SquarePants pants, and that's just what you got yourself into.
That would be surprising if Phoebe had got some SpongeBob SquarePants pants.
It would be.
Pants. That seems incredibly specific.
It is. It is.
Oh, this is where it's gone sour for you in your life, where everything seemed so perfect, and then out came the SpongeBob SquarePants pants.
You just don't need his face there.
Sniffing around, he wants to make something out of this date.
Yeah, he looks so behind him.
The squaddies left, right and centre getting their jollies. Oh, that's not a good choice of phrasing, is it? It's snogging their wartime bows. And so he starts nuzzling at Phoebe's neck in a really creepy way.
He does a lot of creepy gestures in this episode.
They have a big snog, which must have been really faggy, because she's got a fag on the go at the time.
Yeah. Again, that's a word we have to clarify, because we've got American people.
We have to do that on Wikishuffle, our other podcast. We have to do this all the time, which is clarify our Englishisms for our American listeners. I don't think we've got many American listeners.
Just
because,
in case.
Okay, well, fag is English for cigarette. Yes. But I think they know that. So, and the American interpretation of what I might have meant by a faggy snog. Yeah, that's not what happened. Reg comes back with the tea. Gary can't even get a cup of coffee. Worst day ever. They didn't have any coffee. Reg didn't bring him a cup of tea. To be fair, on Reg, they were tea with cup and saucer. You can't carry three of those. Mm-mm. He should have gone with, rather than just sending your third wheel off to get your hot drinks for you. As if things couldn't get any worse, the planned film's been cancelled, and they've got to watch George Formby.
He hates
George Formby. It was supposed to be a film called Lady Hamilton they're watching. Never heard of that.
No.
But the film they're showing instead is Turned Out Nice Again. I would like to set you some homework this week.
Oh, God.
You said last time that you don't really know anything about George Formby.
Yep.
I would like you to track down and watch in time for next time's recording for 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to track down and watch Turns Out Nice Again.
I will try.
I think you're going to like it more than you anticipate. I think you'll find it quite likable.
I will give it a go.
So he's being a grumpy Gus generally.
He storms out.
Well, no, but he's got time to be a bit dickish before he does that.
Mm.
Reg and Phoebe tell him that he's got to go fire watching with them now that he's local. But Gary doesn't want to go fire watching because he's got a sore leg from when he fell over a bike in the blackout. So he storms out because he doesn't want to go and watch the George Formby film. He tells Phoebe that he's got the right hump, and he has.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being his usual petulant child self, and he just storms off and just leaves Phoebe to it. This is great. This is day one that we're on now. This doesn't bode well for the future of Gary living in 1941. So he disappears off back to the flat. He's got his big boy's book of blitz,
which he took with him.
Which, that would have filled that suitcase on its own.
Big book.
That must have been the only thing he had in that suitcase, the big book of the blitz. It's clear that he's getting bored as well. He's in this little flat on his own. He's bored. George Formby comes on the radio. He doesn't like George Formby. No. He doesn't like it one bit. He's got nothing to do. He can't be watching the test match. It's the last day of the test match. Oh,
if he was at home, thrilling for him.
He would be doing really exciting stuff like watching the cricket.
Yeah.
That's as much as I can say about cricket.
I'm sure that's going to offend some people.
I think that is another controversial statement from...
Cricket's rubbish.
Cricket is boring. He has a go at reading the newspaper. Disappointed that the only thing in the newspaper is the war. A certain degree of naivety on Gary's part here.
It is a big story. Love Island hadn't even started yet.
There's no celebrity gossip to be had. Mm. Maybe something about George Formby, but that wouldn't have made him happy.
No.
He says, roll on the days of page three. Planning on keeping himself happy that way, was he? He's hungry.
He's only got fatty bacon.
He wants a Chinese. The only thing that's not on the ration, he's not even getting any of. I'll leave you to make your own conclusions to what he's referring to there with his filthy mind.
Not on the rations.
And he's just feeling like this isn't what he signed up for. And this is on day one. This is day one. This isn't what he signed up for. He's not happy. He had no foresight to anticipate any of this.
Can't go back now. We can't. Well,
he's made this decision. And after just one day, he's not been able to keep himself occupied. But for all of his whinging and childishness and nonsense, Phoebe's come round to see him.
Always does this. It really annoys me.
Just forgiven him.
He was an ass.
He was completely in the wrong. Absolutely and totally in the wrong. She did nothing wrong.
What if Reg wasn't there? What was he supposed to have done? Luckily, Reg was there. And God for Reg.
She's called in late to work, where she's going off being a nurse, saving people that are dying in the Blitz, and she's called in late to come and see you, who's just mardying around in your flat.
Mm-hmm.
She's done that for you. You apologise a bit, but it's obviously you're just doing that because you don't want to be on your own anymore, because the cricket's not on. And yeah, all's forgiven. You've not learnt anything here. You've not grown as a man. This is just going to happen again and again and again. And Phoebe, stop enabling this. They're both happy about the fact that Mrs. Bloss has just gone to the cinema, so they're alone and there's no landlady to complain.
Yeah, Gary does his face, sexy face.
Oh, yeah.
Rub his hands together like a creepy man.
Mm. They have the classic 1940s kiss, which just involves the man and the woman just pressing their faces into one another.
Mm-hmm.
Kissing did not look fun in the past. Kissing did not seem an enjoy. It was a very dry, very bony, tooth-on-tooth, face-crushing exercise. Mm. Old films' depictions of kissing, I don't think anything you'd want to do less than a Casablanca-style, I will forcibly hard push my face on yours kiss.
Like when two stags butt heads.
So they do a bit of that. Oh, it's Reg, though. Reg is at the door.
Mm.
Quick, under the bed.
Oh, she says something really funny.
What a palaver.
What a palaver.
What a palaver.
Oh, dear, this is a palaver. She's going to the bed. Oh, is, Gary.
It's a very appropriate phrase to use. I don't what really a know what it means. I don't even know how to spell it.
Or he just ends up looking at Pavlova, because that's what I would do.
According to the Oxford English Dictionary, it derives from the Portuguese palavra, meaning speech, which meant talk, parley, or discussion, specifically between Portuguese traders and West African natives. Oh, so it's racist in its origin.
Oh.
So what a palaver means what a load of pointless discussion. So what are you doing chatting with those Africans for?
Ah, okay.
Great. It's always nice when things that you think are completely not racist at all turn out to be really scummy. Nitty gritty. Oh. Really racist phrase.
Is it?
Yeah. Getting to the nitty gritty. The nitty gritty was the stuff that was left over in the bottom of slave ships. So you'd get to the nitty gritty after all the slaves had been unloaded. How horrible is that?
There you go.
Mm. So, yeah, you've got to be careful. What a palaver is about how pointless it is talking to Africans. Great. But, yes, apparently going under a bed is a palaver. So Reg is inviting himself in because that's what Reg does. And, again, very entertaining.
That's when he tells his story about how the landlady, there might have been something. And he was opening up a little bit, you know? Gary wants him gone pretty quick, though, because he wants to get his leg over.
I mean, he's got a Phoebe hiding under the bed. Air raid siren goes off,
mm-hmm.
and Gary, forgetting, as he is wont to forget, that he can't just impart knowledge without having a reason for having it, does just say, oh, no, we're fine, there's no bombs going to be dropping today.
Yeah.
Which is because he's learnt that from his book. Now, if you've got that book, you've got half of the information there,
mm-hmm.
which is when and where the bombs fall, that's great. You need to couple that with the knowledge of when and where you are. Otherwise, the information is completely useless. And Gary seems to have forgotten to do that part.
Oh, don't panic. It's the docs that get it tonight. Apart from one bomb that falls on Gibbons Furniture Warehouse. That is, intelligence leads us to believe that a bomb might hit Gibbons Furniture Warehouse, you know, and that's nowhere near here, is it?
Gibbons. Sure, I used to know where that is.
It's just around the corner, you see, sir.
Yeah.
Not quite done your homework there, Gary.
Rookie error.
Well, you've not had anything else to do. Fortunately, Phoebe does know that Gibbons Furniture Warehouse is just around the corner. Can't keep that information to herself. Quite important, so she pipes up from underneath the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Like, Reg didn't know what was going on anyway. He's no idiot.
That's why he was round.
He is. He's a massive idiot. But we're back to the printers and the aftermath that Gary has left behind him.
Sad Ron.
He's a frankly distraught and petrified Ron, which of course he would be. So he sees that Yvonne has come to the printers looking for Gary. And unsurprisingly, he is very concerned about what he's going to say to Yvonne. He believes that he's got a newly mourning Yvonne to deal with.
Mm. But he'll have to play the part of I don't know either at this point.
Which he doesn't do very well, because the first thing that he says though is I know what's happened.
Bad.
It happens there at cross purposes, which is a relief, I suppose, but it's It's not really. It's just delaying the inevitable because she's going to find out at some point. And we end up with another instance of Yvonne thinking that Ron's making a pass at her.
Which I think he was.
Which he might have been a little bit more
I
this
time.
I
think this was the thing. This is what I always think about Ron. He wants Yvonne. He wants Gary to be out of the picture.
But they are at cross purposes because Yvonne doesn't even realise that Gary's gone. I think to save me from having to say the words poor Ron as often as I have to say them, just get a little jingle made up that just says, oh, poor Ron.
Another day, another life from Ron.
So Yvonne storms off and Ron's none the wiser about what the hell he's supposed to do next. But we don't have to worry about that this week. Because we're nearly at the end of the episode. Mm. What we do get is back at the pub. So we've seen the petty reasons why Gary doesn't want to be in 1941 and they're silly. Not saying they're not justified, but now we're getting to see the more horrific side of being in 1941 and why it definitely wasn't better than being in the 90s. And that's because people keep dying everywhere. Mm. So the pub's being used as a makeshift shelter for all the people that have been injured in the air raid. Gary's proving himself to be absolutely useless.
Yeah, as to be expected.
The best he can do is misdiagnose an amputated leg. That takes some doing.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. His bedside manner could be worked on.
Yes.
It would be like someone's given birth and the entire time the doctor's going, oh, Christ.
Oh, this is the worst thing. Oh, my... No, make it stop, make it stop.
That would be a nightmare.
She's a bit scared. He's allowed to be scared by this. He's allowed to be a bit harrowed by it.
He should have some sort of indication at this what the Blitz was like.
He has been going back to 1940 for a year now.
Yeah, and Phoebe's dad blew up into lots of
bits. They only found a hand.
That never happens.
It rarely happens in 1990s Cricklewood. 1990s Cricklewood, that is not something you would routinely be exposed to. But he's been in the East End war-torn London for a year. He knows this stuff, or at least he should. But no, he's just painted it as this perfect picture of happiness and simplicity with him as the hero in the middle and the damsel in distress in need of his love and leg-overing. I'm going to use leg-over as a verb. Yeah, don't try and stop me.
It's quite nice that this is subverted in a little bit because one thing about Phoebe and Yvonne to a certain extent, they're not damsels in distress.
No, quite the opposite. They are both very competent women with good jobs and good social skills and ability to perform well under pressure. Mm. And yeah, these are not simpering wrecks that just need to be rescued by Gary. Far from it. Which makes why they put up with all of his nonsense so much more difficult to understand.
No, I have no answer for that. When I've been annoyed with Phoebe is when she does do these things that seem to go completely against what I expect from her, which is, in my head, Phoebe, as soon as he had that argument with her in the cinema, she would have been like, I'll stop him then.
Yeah.
Because he'll come back, because he always comes back. She's the one with all the power.
Like a bad penny, she's used the phrase herself, that's what she expects to happen, and that's what will happen. That has been proven. She's working as a nurse, for goodness sake, in the worst conditions imaginable. And all we get from Gary is he learns that one of the injured people, and we're not talking killed, we're talking someone with a bump on the head, had been working as a fire watcher, and that's the job he's being expected to do. And so we're witnessing a fundamental cowardice in him as being not congratulatory of this man and his bravery and his accomplishments, just internalising everything to be about him and how he doesn't want to do that or be in this situation. He wants to flee.
He just looks around him and says, oh, but everybody's so, like, sad and hurt. Yeah. A bomb's gone off.
Yeah, they're going through a bit of stuff right now, Gary. And we end very abruptly because this is something of a two-parter, this episode. So there's no tidy resolution here. And that's not to say that there hasn't been a very determined arc and it hasn't felt like an episode in its own right. It just hasn't been wrapped up yet, which must have felt a little bit weird to some sitcom audiences and even to the audiences of Goodnight Sweetheart, because as much as it hasn't followed that pattern of ending the same way it started every week, it's never gone this far to there not being a resolution to a particular episode.
Which is good, because this particular story lends itself to a longer running time.
It needs more exploration, definitely. It's changing Gary's view of what's happening in 1941, which it needed changing. What's preposterous about that is that it hadn't been changed already just through common sense, first-hand observation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. That's episode 5 done. As we said, a great chance for Christopher Etheridge to shine as Reg. Got some really funny lines in, really made clear why we like him so much. We also watched, as a part of this episode, there is an interview with Christopher Etheridge on the DVD. So we had a little look of that to see if we could find some insight into Christopher Etheridge, the man, the classically trained Royal Shakespeare Company actor Christopher Etheridge,
mm-hmm.
which you get that a lot. You get a lot of these real screwball comedy actors that if you actually look at what their body of work is, they're serious thespians. And it's quite interesting to see him as a well-spoken thesp, and he did come across as quite thespian but likeable at the same time, and he clearly enjoys doing what he does an awful lot. He was incredibly complimentary about Nicholas Lyndhurst, because nobody in the world's got a bad thing to say about Nicholas Lyndhurst. Yeah, whatever, we've heard it before. He sounds like he's just the world's nicest man. Boring. Can somebody please give me some dirt on Nicholas Lyndhurst? One interesting thing that he did say about when talking about the appeal of the show, and that was that he said that it was very transgenerational in the appeal. And yeah, that's a big deal. If you're trying to get to the biggest audience that you can on a big main primetime BBC One sitcom, you need lots of people to be watching it who aren't the same type of person. And Goodnight Sweetheart really does do that. You can see that it would have appealed to people that, because this is only 50 years after the war had finished, there'd be plenty of people watching with first-hand memories of what it was like. One thing we didn't mention about this episode was when Ron was trying to encourage Gary to stay in the 1990s, to entice him to stay, he chose beer with widgets and Wonder Bra adverts.
Yeah, of course. Which,
thinking about it, I'm thinking of my memory of the 1990s. Yeah, that pretty much was the two biggest things of the 1990s. They got that right.
Mm.
People wouldn't stop talking about widgets in the 1990s.
You still get them. They're still like in
Yeah, but we don't go on about them as much anymore. But when these came out, it's like it changed the world. The widget.
Didn't.
Likewise, the Wonder Bra. The two most important things of the 1990s. I was talking about Christopher Etheridge, wasn't I? And we also learnt that at the time of filming, he was going to be appearing in a play starring as Norman Tebbutt, which immediately went, yes, that's who he reminds me of, Norman Tebbutt. The man looks incredibly like Norman Tebbutt. If I was casting somebody to play Norman Tebbutt, I would definitely choose Christopher Etheridge. And that's what we learnt from the interview with Christopher Etheridge. And you're right, it's a very nice name and it's very fun to say.
Christopher Etheridge.
Christopher Etheridge, Christopher Etheridge, Christopher Etheridge.
Don't say it three times, you'll appear.
Thank you very much for listening. Once again, we put out the feelers on the social media to see what anybody else had got to think about this episode before we recorded. Chloe says, Reg is on excellent form in this episode. Also feels like the first time Gary actually feels bad about what he's doing to Yvonne. Which is true, there is some guilt at play with how he interacts with Yvonne in fixing the shelves. It's a bad way of manifesting that, but that's what happens. And she does go on to make clear that faking his suicide was not the answer, and that the reality of war sort of hits him as well at the end there, and the romanticism starts to dissipate. And we've also had Catherine on Facebook say that it's one of her top three episodes and that she loves it. Catherine, that's not enough information. You can't tell us one of your top three episodes and not tell us the other two.
Yeah.
We've got no context now. What if your other two are rubbish and therefore we don't trust your judgment? We're back in 2 weeks' time for episode 12. In the meantime, you can check out our other podcast, Wiki Shuffle, where we press the random article button on Wikipedia and then talk about whatever happens off the back of that. We welcome submissions to the Garrulery. Mm-hmm. We had a Garrulery submission this week.
Oh, we did. Paul Withers, and he emailed it to us. Here's Gary, arriving in 1940, Terminator style, with nothing but a massive bar of fruit and nut to hide his. Fruit and nuts, warning. Once seen, it cannot be unseen. And there he is. Got some bananas, little fruit and nut, a little bit of pubes.
Yes.
Little pubes there and he's saying shit. It's a lovely image. Good use of perspective. Nicholas Lyndhurst looks very malnourished in this picture.
Time travel, Terminator style. He's going to take it out of you.
Yeah. Physically and mentally.
So thank you for that. If you would like to give us any artistic interpretations of how Goodnight Sweetheart makes you feel, then please do. You can email them to podcast@wikishuffle.co.uk or send them via the Facebook or the Twitters. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Goodnight Sweetcast is a Wikishuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNSCast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.